Hi, you're listening to the Full Life Podcast with Melanie Lynham. Kirsty is the founder of The Home Chronicles, a blog which is an expression of the home in relationships, food, and DIY. She is also a pastor and together with her husband Nick are the campus pastors of Hope Center Ipswich. In this conversation, Kirsty gives us great advice for where to start in decorating your home on a shoestring budget. She gives us some great time management tips, and Kirsty also shares some quick and easy go-to recipes that are regularly on her family's menu. We find out what inspires Kirsty's decorational style and what motivated her to start painting. Friends, we also do go a bit deeper. As Kirsty says, a shadow over her childhood is domestic violence. We don't go into any details about what happened, but we do talk about what it is like now as an adult, learning new habits and growing into a healthy human being who has come out of that kind of environment. And Kirsty also shares with us her concept of the art of fighting well within the context of a marriage. Now, just before we go into this conversation, I do want to let you know that this will be my last episode for a while. I'm taking a 6-month break to rest, maybe get some earlier nights, draw closer to God, and allow Him to breathe fresh vision into my heart. But I am looking forward to returning with some more great interviews. So right now, enjoy this conversation with the gorgeous Kirsty Emery. Hi, Kirsty. Welcome to the Full Life Podcast. How are you today?
Going really well, thanks. Very well, Mel.
Good, fantastic. I'm so glad that we've been able to actually catch up for this conversation. This is attempt 2, isn't it?
Yes, I know. A few things happened in between, but we're here. That's right.
We have made it. And how about we get started first of all with you telling us a bit about yourself, about who your family is, where you live, and what you do.
Yeah, so my name's Kirsty, obviously. I'm married to Nick and we have two beautiful boys, Levi and Jackson. They are one's about to turn 10, Levi's about to turn 10, and Jackson is 7 years old. I had to think about that. So those are our two boys. We live in Brisbane. Nick and I are pastors at Hope Center, which is a church here in Greater Brisbane. And on top of that, I run The Home Chronicles, which is a DIY blog. It's a bit of a creative outlet for me. And I'm exploring a whole new side of me, which just gives me a restful outlet of creativity. So, yeah, that's me.
And you've recently, actually, I've seen on social media, you ran, what was it, a conference almost through social media, like Instagram Lives over a weekend. Mm. How did that go?
Yeah. So that was with the Reno Design Show, which was absolutely incredible. So they had invited me to be a guest speaker this year at their home show in person, which goes over 2 days, just doing some DIY tutorials with people in person. And the show instead went virtual this year with COVID. And so Renee, who is the incredible founder of the Reno Design Show and has this great vision for a different type of home show really for Brisbane. She just asked me, would I help interview some of their guests on Instagram, which was incredible. I got to interview Charlie Orbone from Selling Houses Australia, Better Homes and Gardens, and some of my favourite people in the interior design and DIY world that are just absolutely beautiful people. Who are just great creative souls, really practical with DIY and the top of their game in their industry for those who were interior designers. So, yeah, it was pretty amazing. It was really fun.
Oh, what a fantastic opportunity.
I was completely blindsided by it and had an absolute ball doing it.
Yep, excellent. And I bet you learnt so much. Were you really inspired to just do so much more with your blog and with your home afterwards?
Oh, look, absolutely. But I think the thing that most inspired me with all these people is every one of them has their own personal story. And one of them has a husband with a brain tumor at the moment and is one of Australia's top designers. And just the grace that they walk with in their everyday life, their positivity, and then just how grounded people like Charlie Aubon are, just, you know, super relaxed and just beautiful down-to-earth people. So of everything, more than a highlight mm-hmm. of being motivated to do DIY was just seeing how beautiful and down-to-earth these yeah. people are. So, yeah.
Wow, that's so good. I think that we can just learn so much through people's own stories and how they live their lives. Mm-hmm. So that would have just been really inspiring.
Yeah,
so you and Nick are pastors at Hope Center. Which mm-hmm. campus are you at?
So we just started Ipswich campus. We are coming into our eighth Sunday of gathering. So again, COVID hit. Mm-hmm. We were meant to launch the week before Easter, which we were really excited about. And we all went into lockdown. And so we only started our services 8 weeks ago. So we're 8 weeks young.
Oh, wow. So are you the campus pastors?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. 8 weeks young. How's it going?
8 weeks young. It's going really well. I mean, Ipswich has been hit with COVID at the moment, yeah. you know, wake call and all of that. So it has been really interesting. We've had a few families in lockdown because their schools have had COVID outbreaks or staff have. So it's been a really interesting time, but a really beautiful time. I think people have come into church after lockdown, and there's such an emphasis on being the people of God, being the ecclesia as the church. Mm. And we've seen a real shift in spirit of people just wanting, hungering after the presence of God. And we've just really sensed God in the midst of us, and a real sense of being prayerful, felt that across our whole church, and that God's just doing something new in his church globally. So,
wow, that yeah. sounds so exciting. And what a great way to be part of what he is doing in his church globally too, is yeah. pastoring and planting a church. Have you and Nick yeah. always felt like that was something that God was calling you to at some point, or did this come along as a bit of a surprise?
I think just slowly, incrementally, it's something I think we both, well, I know we both felt called to ministry. And what that looked like, we said from the outset, was we were never going to be people precious about, you know, I want to be a youth pastor and that's me for life, or I want to be this. We've not really, I don't think we've had that. We're just passionate about loving people. We're really passionate about discipleship, about seeing people, whether they know God at all, whether they're in the four walls of church or not, is seeing people pointed to Christ and on a journey and growing into who God's called them to be. So whatever we do, that has been a huge focus for us, and just being connected in community, the broader community. So we would do that no matter what role we have on a staff.
Yeah, I love that. That's so good.
Yeah.
So you have a blog called The Home Chronicles. Would you like to tell us mm-hmm. a bit more about that and how it all came about?
Yeah, so it's something I sat on, I think it was 12, maybe 18 months. It's just stories of the home. So when we're on a shoestring budget, we're both pastors, so we're both on low wages. And when we were living in our rental, I've always loved hospitality and making our home somewhere that people can feel that they belong. And basically how The Home Chronicles started was growing up for me, not necessarily the most stylish magazine homes or anything, but there were people's homes that became a haven for me that I just felt safe in, homes that you just felt like you belonged in, that were an extension of your family. And I think that the way people created spaces just made it conducive to being warm and welcoming. And so, we lived in this little worker's cottage. We've rented forever. And it was tiny, but we would have 30 or 40 people over because I just love people connecting and new people, you know, to church, meeting people they've never met before, or soccer mums meeting kindy mums, whatever it is. We've loved that. It brings us to life. And so always had this sense of, God, one day when we get our own home that, you know, we build ourselves a buy. I just can't wait to make it that haven. So I think we were in our house for a week, and we had someone live with us for 6 weeks. So yeah, we were still boxers and everything, and really on and off for the last 2 years that we've been in our home. We've had people come and go. We've just had someone leave for 2 weeks, and we've had a 2 week break, and another friend's coming to live for 2 weeks before she gets married, and Nick's doing the wedding. And so we just really love the idea of opening our home and extending our family to include other people. And yeah, anyway, in that all, beautiful. I love art and I love creativity, and Nick is incredible with handyman work. So I come up with all these crazy ideas, like the half wall behind me, the bed ledge, which goes from, you can't see it, but it goes from wall to wall, and I love art. So yeah. It just, I try things, I try paint
That's
things.
That's great.
And in the process, I've met all these beautiful Australian artists around our nation that are just so talented, and just a really beautiful community. And yeah, so Home Chronicles is kind of an expression of the home in relationships, food, and DIY. And it's definitely leaning more DIY at the moment. I've been slack on the food front, because when you're doing DIY, you're normally eating microwave meals. And yeah, so we've been doing that. And in COVID, it's been a little bit hit and miss with the unpredictability of life. Mm. But I do it first out of love. So whenever I feel pressure to perform with it, then I just take a step back and remember its place in my life. So yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
Wow. So you're a very creative person, and you really are expressing that creativity through a number of ways in your life. You've got lots of plates that you are juggling, but it sounds like you're doing really well with all of them. Okay.
Imperfectly. So, very imperfectly.
Is there such thing as perfect, the perfect way to juggle it all, I wonder?
No, I don't think there is. I drop lots of balls.
Yeah, I would actually say it would be good to hear from you actually on any tips for time management. Like how do you keep up to date with your blog at the same time as, you know, being mom and, you know, keeping home and also pastoring people, preparing for services, all that?
Yeah, well, firstly, Nick is an incredibly hands-on dad, and he is a domestic god. He is great in the home.
Wonderful.
So I have to honestly say, I can't tell you the last time I turned on a washing machine. Nick does all the laundry. That's his thing. He loves doing that. I love that he loves doing it. And we share the rest of the load of everything else together. Mm-hmm. And whoever has the busier week, the other one steps in, and vice versa. But honestly, he's a huge part of what I'm able to juggle. Yeah. Our kids are very independent, and we take them on a journey with whatever we're doing. So I do an hour of power with cleaning, and I've got the kids left, right, and center doing whatever's age appropriate. I probably, as far as time management goes, I just prioritize what I'm happy to drop and what I'm not happy to compromise on. So first and foremost for me is time with Jesus. Can't compromise on that. You've got to come from a place of rest with that. Also family, we prioritize a meal around the table every day. It's these days it's dinner, but there's seasons in the past where it's maybe been breakfast. We play a game of cards almost every day, if not multiple times a day, with the kids.
Oh, really?
Monopoly Deal has been going strong for a good 3 years with our kids. Obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And so, that are all the big chunks that come in first. Just being smart with time, ordering groceries online, keeping meals, you know, a couple of slow cooker meals are always on the run. And yeah, just keeping that simple. When it comes to work, so I am also, I work for Australian Christian Churches nationally as well. And so just diarize as much as I can, which I've learnt doesn't come naturally to me. And really, I'm probably not a person who stresses about what I can't do. So I'm very comfortable with choosing what's going to drop this week. What am I taking time to get back to as far as responses? What's urgent in front of me and what do I need to plan ahead for? But yeah, I think it's become a little bit more natural over the years. And you never start with one big plate. It's kind of like you grow with it. But in saying that, I've done terribly in past seasons where I've done too much and I've been burnt out and worn out. So I think I know my limits. I know my boundaries and I'm more preemptive language-wise in what I say no to and how I say no. So for instance, we could get birthday party invites, church invites to different things. But what we do now is we fight for family time. So we look ahead and go, wow, the next 4 weeks are really busy. How about we do something like let's block out this Friday. No matter what we're invited to, the answer is no, we've already got a family thing on. Now that might be the four of us at home playing a game of cards in our jammies, but we don't feel the need to explain ourselves because at the end of our life, when our kids are adults, we want children who look back and say, I had a great relationship with my parents growing up. We want children who want to spend time with us when they get older.
So
that's kind of the big rocks that we focus on first, and then everything else fits in around that.
Oh, you're talking about the analogy where you have like the flask with the big rocks that go in and then the little rocks go in and they all fit together.
The sand or whatever. The sand. I wasn't thinking that, but that's perfect. Oh. That's a great analogy. Let's go with that.
Yeah. That's so good. I really like them. So do you have any DIY projects at the moment on the go?
So we've just finished this wall, which was a huge project in ISO. I'll see if I can pick this up. You're okay for me to move the camera. It's on a tripod. Mm-hmm. So, and I haven't even looked at my bedroom to see what's there. But yeah, so there's this ledge here that we built out with artwork on it. Let me put the tripod back in place. So that took a number of weeks and it was a forced project because our carpet had a defect in it. We've only been here 2 years, noticed it at the beginning, but thought it was this weird line that I thought would go away and that might be a fault line or something. Anyway, it never did. They came and checked it. It's a defect. So in having to replace our carpet with a 2-week deadline, we built that in, I think it ended up being 3 weeks. Built the structure out, planned it, got all our supplies and whatever. And so there's that. I have a beautiful vase that I got in an op shop. It's about $10 and it's a shape that's in, and you can see it at Greenhouse Interiors or Fenton and Fenton or some of the big design studios. And I like to shop for shape. So this vase they've got is like a tubular vase at the moment. It's like somewhere between $150 to $400 depending where you buy it from. I like the shape, but I don't feel the need to spend that. And so I just go to op shops, and I found inadvertently, I store it in the back of my head and happened to walk into this really great op shop we have near us, and that had this cool tubular vase that is vintage. And it's just got a really ugly brown on it that's not, you know, doesn't fit the environment. So I'm going to paint that and put some patterns on it. I've got a couple of canvases aside that I've got some ideas of art to work on. But yeah, this last few months since I guess life returning to somewhat normal here in Queensland, kids going back to school and that, we've just been taking it slow. So even DIY projects have gone a little bit on the back burner for now. Again, knowing what to drop when you need to. So
that's right. Yeah. So did you buy a new house or an old house?
We bought a house. We bought a block of land and built.
Okay.
But there was an old house on our block and the block next door. So we bought half of a subdivision.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then any add-ons that you're making are add-ons to a new house. I was just curious. You mentioned earlier that that you love to take baths and that it takes a bit to fill the bath. And so I was wondering if it was old or new.
Oh, no, old houses I reckon would be faster. It's the laws and regulations that the water doesn't get too hot and that it doesn't fill fast.
Really?
Which is really silly because it takes about, I reckon, half an hour to fill a bath.
Wow.
And, you know, that's like a pretty full bath at that. But often we say it's so silly how long it takes because I forget about it and then it's really full and I've got to let water out and wasting water, scoop it out of the bucket, put it in the yard or whatever.
Yeah.
But, it doesn't make sense to fill it up slow, fill it up fast, have high pressure. So
yeah,
it's a thing.
Okay. It's a thing. Yeah. Well, I love what you did. So that replaces a bed board, doesn't it? What you guys have done. Do you have a lot of room? Do you have a lot of room in your house to display all your pretty things like vases and decor?
We've got some wall space. We have a lot of windows, which means as far as huge art goes, like but natural light's beautiful and we have beautiful green surrounds outside. It's open plan. It's a narrow lot home. So our lot, the land size is 10.5 meters wide by 40 meters deep. So it's a narrow lot.
Yeah.
But it's open plan and we've made the best use of footprint. We've got little nooks and crannies. I don't like over cluttering spaces, but we do. We've got corners to put stuff and that I like functional pieces as well. So I just don't go buy something because it's a trend or whatever. I've got to really like it. And it's got to have a place and serve a purpose. So
I'm a bit like that too.
So
do you have any tips for people? Okay, so two things I wanted to talk to you about regarding like around interior decorating. The first thing is, do you have tips for anybody who just does not know where to start in their own home? Someone like me, for instance, who... I just find it difficult to choose what to buy first. Like in my mind, I think I want to get a rug, I want to get a lamp, I want to get painting. Mm-hmm. You know, you could just come up with like this huge list of things. Do you have like any ideas for like how did you get started yourself?
Yeah, great question. So for me, there's a couple of things. There is the first thing I started with that was a really beautiful piece is our dining room table, which you can see on the Home Chronicles on best seen on Instagram, but also on Facebook. And that was a piece we were going to build when we were in our tiny little worker's cottage. It had a really big space, funnily enough, for a dining room. And I said to Nick, we need to buy a dining table that fits at least 12 people. Like it's just... who we are, we've got to make that work. And people were like, what happens if whatever house you buy doesn't have the space for it? I'm like, we won't buy the house. It has to be able to fit people around it. I don't care if it's a tiny house. It just needs a space for a dining room. And so that was the first big piece we bought. And we were going to actually build a big farmhouse table. And Nick called me one day and he said, hey, I'm at the shop. Come have a look. I walked in. I'm like, yes, that's what I want you to build. And it was a very expensive table. We couldn't afford it. And we had sleepers picked out, railway sleepers that we were going to do something with at a timber yard. Anyway, the sales lady walked up. She said, we actually have a really big sale and this comes down to this price. And so we got that table and it was basically cheaper than what it would have cost us to build in the end.
That's amazing.
Which was just like, I think it was, the table was $2,000 or something, which is out of our budget. I don't know about other people's. That is, and we paid hardly anything remotely close to that. It was like 40% off or something. So that was, it must have been more. It would have been more than 40% off. So we started with that. And at that point, I really appreciated, there's a saying, the poor man pays twice. Mm-hmm. And I just want to buy quality that doesn't end up in a dump and can't be broken down. And so I'd rather take my time or shop secondhand. And so I became a bit of a Facebook marketplace, council pickup. I'm the person driving around looking for the thing that you can restore. That's where I started. And since then, we're just slow to save and buy something quality. I don't want to be a person who changes out my stuff regularly. If I buy a table, I want that to be the table for life. Same with couches and things. So yeah, so we filled slowly. So I think one tip would be fill slowly. Don't feel the pressure to get fill it all at once, because what we end up doing is we compromise, we kind of lose our way, we lose context of what we're doing. And there's something really satisfying in decorating slow and looking at, you know, I just know in the back of my head, I want a piece for here, and it could take me 2 years to find that piece. We were without stools in our kitchen for a good year, but I found these incredible original bentwood high stools for the kitchen, and I paid $100 for four, so $25 each. Wow. But these chairs would be worth about $150 to $200 each.
Wow.
And the girl happened to be around the corner at her house, and I drove straight there. And when I got there, she's like, I've had about 40 calls. What's so special about these chairs?
And I'm like, nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, so I was like, thank you. She'd already taken my cash. We were loading it in the car, but I'm like, oh my gosh, what a bargain.
So drive.
Go. So I love decorating slow and waiting for the right piece. I think there's something anti-consumerist in that, and I can't tell you what it is. My friend Hannah Opshops, and she runs Never Ever Pay Retail, and it's the same for her. There's a satisfaction, like that delayed gratification that comes when you just wait, and you within your budget. We pay cash for things. We don't go into debt on anything like that. That's not an asset.
So
as far as decorating a room goes, starting with your big pieces first matters, and then filling from there.
Okay.
It could be a rug, it could be a couch, depending on the room. It could be that you have a beautiful art piece that you've fallen in love with and you have a wall for it, and you might want to design around that. There's rules that you can follow, but really like number one, I'm not formally trained, but number two, I just think sometimes people can be a bit precious about design rules, and you've just got to, you know, buy things that you actually love and things that build memories. So we took our kids to your Monday markets. We always holiday in Noosa. And so we said to the kids, you have, I think it was $20 or $30 each. And we said, here's the rule. You can't buy plastic toys with it. And we'd prefer it if you buy something that is a memory in the long run for you, that reminds you of this holiday. And so we were really proud. Jackson, our youngest, there was this artist, and she was sketching a meerkat. And so Jackson just decided, I'm going to buy a piece of art. So he spent $30, and it was this beautiful hand drawn with a black pen meerkat, and we've had it framed, and it's in the boys' homework station. There's a photo of it on Instagram. But I love that he chose something like that is made by a local artist, so it's supporting a local business, and it's something that you can keep for life. So that's really cool. Levi chose this beautiful vintage Chinese junk ship. So, you know, like the timber ship with the beautiful coloured, you know, flags or whatever.
Oh, wow.
So he chose that, which was really amazing. And, just like a nice timber piece that, you know, it's not a plastic toy, it's not a lolly. And it didn't take much prompting for the kids. Like, they chose that on their own. But that was a year ago. To this day, the boys talk about that. And when we go to new places, they're on the hunt now for memories, which I just think is a great way to buy, is to, you know, things from your travels, things with personality. I'm not a huge fan of fast trends and just going with the next thing that's in, and you buy it cheap And it's never, when you buy at a lot of stores that sell things cheap, they're never quite to scale and the quality is never great, so they're not long lasting. So, yeah, those are just some things that matter to us when you look at styling a home. Yeah.
Fantastic. That's so helpful. Let's go on to food. You love to cook simple, healthy meals for your family and mm-hmm. blog about them and share them with us. Have you got any go-to recipes that are quick and easy and simple and healthy that kind of end up regularly on your menu?
Yes, at the moment, something that I have that is, it's quick, but it's in a slow cooker, but the preparation's quick and it's good to put on. We had it tonight and last night actually, which is beef cheeks in the slow cooker.
Yum. Yeah.
So it's actually quite a cheap meat. It's not an expensive meat and it's perfect for the slow cooker. It's really tough otherwise. You can't really cook it another way. But beef cheeks in a slow cooker with red wine, some fresh thyme, and you just pan fry it with garlic and onion first to brown it. Throw it in the slow cooker with some veggie stock and red wine, or there's a few different sauces, but that's just an easy one to throw a cup of red wine in. And so, yeah, we do that in a slow cooker and then normally do that with a cauliflower leek mash, which is just, we've got a Thermomix that does help. So it's a really quick thing to do. But mashed potato or rice or something like that. Another one is, I do have it on the Home Chronicles, which is the citrus honey chicken, which was a bit of an invented recipe when we did a farm stay up on the Sunshine Coast, just using the produce that they had up there at the farm. And so that's essentially just oranges and lemons together layered over loose chicken pieces. And yeah, that's beautiful with a bit of honey and it's very zesty. Yum. And it's good in summer with a salad and good in winter with roast veg. So nice, versatile, quick and easy one.
Mm-hmm. How do you cook the chicken? Do you slow cook that one?
So I do that
well?
In the oven. Okay. No, I do that one in the oven. But I have been trying dry slow cooking lately, which is no liquid.
Oh.
But there's enough heat and steam because the lid's on that there's some meats that you can dry cook, which is really interesting. So I did a roast, I think it was the roast chicken I did the other day with no liquid.
Yeah.
And other than a squeeze of whatever, lime and honey, whatever I put in the slow cooker with the chicken. Mm-hmm. And sorry, I bumped my
that's
headset
okay.
there.
That's totally fine.
But we did that and that was really nice. It was anything that's got a bit of fat on it, like lamb, you don't have to cook with liquid.
There you go. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I just remember my question that I forgot before.
Yeah.
So I will just go back and quickly slip this in there. What is your inspiration for your art and for your home style?
Oh gosh. Okay. So my inspiration probably comes from colors.
Okay.
As opposed to looking at something and seeing it. I love color. So yeah. I love abstract art, as you can see behind me. And I see colors and I'm like, oh, I'd love to put those in a painting together.
Ah.
There is a painting that I've got of a face of a girl. She is also on Instagram, on my Instagram and Facebook. And I've been drawing her since I was about 8 or 9 years old.
Really?
And I found a book from high school and I had sketches of her in it and I just would give her, it's just basically that I could draw this cartoon and I'd give her different hairstyles and that, but I decided to paint her and it was really daunting process. And I'd never painted a face before and I'd only ever done one or two random paintings before, but that idea of failing, that I might not get there and do it, was a really daunting thing. But to push through it and to go through the layers of painting again, God really spoke to me as I painted and made errors and that you could paint over and reshape and make something beautiful out of it. And there's a great painting of her with a turban and she's a bit cartoony. People say she looks like Kate Blanchett when they come into my home.
Kate Blanchett.
Have a look and tell me what you think.
Is it your personal Instagram account or on Home Chronicles?
On the Home Chronicles, yeah.
Okay. I'm just looking. It's the Home Chronicles, hey.
The Home Chronicles. Yeah.
Okay. I'm really curious now. I'm just going to flick through.
Scroll. You might have to scroll for a bit.
Oh, really? It's like far down, is it?
Oh, not. Wouldn't be too far, but it's me adjusting the painting. She's pink.
Adjusting the painting. When did you start painting? How old were you?
My first painting I did was when Levi was a toddler.
Really?
What inspired you to get started? And I've only done a few paintings.
Yeah.
I just I think
there it is.
I think being a feeding mum in the middle of the night and scrolling Pinterest, looking at things, going, I should give this a go. I should do something. And again, I love colour and I've always loved making things since I was a kid. So I just never branched out.
Yeah. Well, good on you.
Yeah.
I love that you were bold enough to try something new. And I agree with you that there's always that fear of, but what if I try and then I am not good at it? Or if I just totally mess it up and discover another thing that I just can't do. I don't know if that's like a fear that
I think
many people
honestly,
have.
I think everybody can paint.
Really?
We did this painting as a family. It's also further down in my history and Instagram. And I just squeezed a few different colors onto a canvas and then gave each family member a paintbrush. And we just like went abstract. And it's I haven't got it up in the house. I need to get it framed.
Can you see? Oh, my phone. Is it that one?
Yeah.
That's the one.
That's the one I did when Levi was a toddler. That was my first painting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. And it's big.
A lot of people. It's huge.
So I couldn't fit big for your very first one. You're like, if it's going to be bad, it's going to be really bad.
It was the stupidest idea to go so big. I didn't even think of that until I put paint on it and I realized, how do you get texture? Because everything looked flat and I just had to work it until I realized I could be a little bit imperfect with it. So I've been staring at it at dinner time going, I think it's time I do another abstract. So,
to add to it, like to have in a different room, or do you mean to replace it?
No, don't just to paint. It.
Oh, good.
No,
because it's beautiful.
I can't replace it. And it's attached to memories now. I actually didn't like it for such a long time.
Really?
And then grew to love it. Well, I think you lose context of anything you've done yourself. You've got no, objectivity. Mm. But, it's become part of our family and people love it when people come over. They're like, where did you buy this? And I love saying, I made it. It was my first painting. So,
I'm so inspired by that. Your theory of I think everyone can paint. Yes, I can paint, but I can't paint well.
I have put on the blog, which is thehomechronicles.com, I have put something on what's the title of the article? It's like how to paint like a pro. Do you know what half the secret is framing your canvases? That's what makes them look great. So see that Nick built the timber frame around that. I just noticed when people paint stuff themselves and put it up, they often don't put it in a timber frame or anything. And you can tell they've painted it. But when it goes in a frame, it just looks professional all of a sudden.
So
it makes an average bit of art great.
And the other piece of advice there would be to marry a man who is as handy as Nick, who can build a table and a ledge in your room and frames for your art pieces.
And everything he does, he's doing for the first time. He's learning on the go. So
good
it's
on
inspiring.
Him. Good on
it.
Him.
Yeah.
I will give a shout out to my hubby Dan too. He is very much like that too.
It's so good.
But I might get him to build some frames for some prints of mine. Okay, cool. So let's pivot our conversation. I want to talk about you on more of a personal note too. Now, I know that you share briefly on your website that you did have a wonderful childhood, but that one cloud that kind of is over your – one shadow that is over your family is domestic violence. Would you like to just elaborate a bit more on that and the impact that had on you?
Yeah, so we as children grew up in a home with family violence, and you can easily read on the About Me section on the Home Chronicles to kind of get a bit of the why behind why I'm so passionate about a happy home and a joy-filled home. And, so that was our childhood story. Layers of complexity to it, lots of good moments in amongst some really bad moments. But essentially, it impacts children. And so I was quite an anxious child. I was anxious in high school. Really, it's only been in my adult years that I've really begun to undo my thinking, my patterns of thinking, and learning simple things like to not justify and explain myself all the time, which is a byproduct of being in an environment where you got to walk on eggshells all the time. And I know that will resonate for people, whether it's a physically violent home, or maybe there's just an emotionally dysfunctional home or emotionally manipulative. You don't have to be in a home of domestic violence necessary to experience that idea of walking on eggshells. And so it bred a lot of anxiety and overthinking, not knowing how to really deal with men in particular. I didn't have a bond with a male figure that was positive. So, having to learn that and learning to trust and how to deal with the opposite sex. So those are all hurdles and obstacles that we had to overcome as a family. Had a lot of counselling personally that I chose to pursue for the sake of who I was as an individual, but also not wanting to carry any of that into my relationships, and obviously most importantly into my immediate family with my husband and kids. So it's something I've had to fight for and work really hard on. And I am honestly, every single day I'm so grateful for the family unit that we have. Mm. I'm grateful for the life that my mum has now. I'm grateful for the life that my sister has. And I'm so thankful that we all have healthy relationships and healthy people in our life. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, but it impacted my mental health. That would be the big thing. And it's all subtle. When it's your normal, you don't know any different. And so it's hard to change when it's the only thing you've known. It honestly, finding Jesus when I was 18, like coming to Christ, being in a church community, were two really pivotal parts of the beginning of my growth journey. And then taking ownership and deciding there's certain behaviors, whether it's, I think sometimes we think, oh, well, if I'm not hitting people or I'm not violent towards people, obviously domestic abuse covers a number of things psychologically, emotionally, and that it's not just physical, but we can look and go, oh, I'm not doing the things the perpetrator was doing, so I'm okay. But there's actually byproducts of the response of unhealthy, the unhealthy responses to that person that are also not healthy, retreating from conflict, trying to be a peacekeeper instead of a peacemaker, lying to cover over things in case you get into trouble, over justification and over explaining yourself, or being a rescuer all the time in other people's problems, are all symptoms of unhealthy traits you can get from growing up in that environment. So, yeah, taking ownership and having to fight real hard and go, I refuse for this to be my life. I've found Jesus. He's promised me an abundant life. So I'm going to pursue his truth, walk in his life, in his light, and put some people in my life around me that hold me accountable and spur me on and encourage me to grow, and people who are willing to have the tough conversations with me when I need. So, yeah.
Wow. So did you get that counselling before you were married to Nick?
Or after? Just before. Mm-hmm. I think Nick and I were dating when inviting somebody else into my family unit. We were dating. I just became acutely aware of and some things had heightened with circumstance changes at the time. But, and I think being an adult and living on my own in a different city, all of those things played a part in stepping out and looking in with fresh eyes. And so we were dating, and I just wanted to get help. So I did. I didn't have a label for it. I didn't think my family was different to anybody else, but it was in the counselling process that we were able to put a name to what we were going through, which was really helpful.
You have written an article in your blog called The Art of Fighting Well.
Yeah.
Would you like to tell us a bit more about that? Just that, that idea, especially coming out of your background.
Yeah. Again, I wanted to pursue healthy communication. So the day Nick and I started dating, when he actually sat down and we shared our feelings for one another and decided like this was something we were going to do, I said to Nick, I promised myself that whenever this happened, when I was going to seriously date someone, that I'd have this conversation. And so I said to him, I've had this passion, and it's an observation that I've made in relationships, and that it's 99% of the time in a healthy relationship, you don't intend to hurt the other person. It's normally, it comes from a place of miscommunication. What we've learned in pursuing counseling ourselves is state of origins. We come from a different state of origin, a different family subculture, different way of communicating. And then you're just two very different people. And so you come together and you're going like this. And so 99% of the time when we hurt each other, it's not intentional. And so I just said to Nick, I've always wanted to try something. Would you be committed to agreeing right now, outside of the heat of the moment, that you're going to hurt me and I'm going to hurt you, and that most likely it's not going to be intentional? And now that we've got that out the way, when we need to bring it up with the other person that you've hurt me or I've hurt you, we no longer need to defend each other because we're on the same team and we've just already established, yeah, we're going to hurt each other. So let's give permission to bring that up healthily. And so we created what we called rules of engagement and came up with some healthy ways to be able to bring up conflict in a non-inflammatory way and in a disarming way so that we were approaching it together as a team, rather than what I see happen in a lot of relationships is someone hurts someone and it's unintentional, but they spend 90% of the time trying to prove the way they went about it and to show they didn't mean it that way. And in doing so, this person over here never feels heard. And so a lot of the conversation is spent defending and not listening. And when we disarm and give permission to, we're going to hurt each other, that's okay. Let's just bring it up in a healthy way. Then you get to move into the real things that are underlying underneath whatever that hurt or conflict is. So, yeah, that's where we started.
Yeah, that's fantastic. How many years have you guys been married for?
Got married in 2008, so there's that 12 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, next year's 13 in April. Yeah. And I think we've been together 14 and friends 15. So, yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah,
I just think that's a really great way to start a relationship. Like, that wasn't even just before you got married, was it? It was right at the I like you conversation.
It was the day of the I like you. And you know what? We actually had some criticism from people because we were just so excited about that and like, what a great way to start. And we had quite a few people give us puzzled looks going like, oh, you guys just need to chill. You just need to just enjoy dating. But that allowed us to enjoy dating because we didn't have any serious fights in that time because we had lots of conversations and we still have lots of conversations. So, and we haven't always done it perfectly. There's been times, especially in the torment of sleep deprivation with, young kids, and the busyness of life where we've been at the end of our rope, but we've got a place to come back to. Yeah. And we remind the other person, hey, we're team Emery. And so, when we stray from that, we go back to the foundation that we built. And it's harder, but it's easier in the long run. And it helps us keep short accounts.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Instead of just hoarding onto grudges and building up a record of things that the other person has done wrong. Yeah, that's so good. Excellent. Well, I actually really love something that you did write on your website about a dream that you have for the future. Would you like to tell us a bit more about that? Something to do with a homestead for women with children fleeing domestic and family violence. Tell us about your big idea and dream and goal.
Yeah. So in 2019, I had to get a protection order for our family after not having contact with someone in our life for about 8 years. And that was really confronting and brought up a lot of things again after what had been a very peaceful period. And we got that to its full extent. But in the process of that and going through the court system, we were very fortunate to be not in a domestic violence situation, as in, you know, living with someone. And so we were there with our community of support around us. You know, I had Nick with me, my mum had her husband, my sister was there, and we were a united force that got to support each other. But I looked around as we worked with our social worker through all the forms, and there were other people in the room, and there was this one lady, and she had been sexually assaulted by an ex-partner and was also there looking for an order. She had a young child in hiding. There was another lady there, and this one broke my heart. She was from a pocket of Asia. I think she was from Vietnam, and her 20-something-year-old adult son was given permission to be in the room. They had to ask all of us if we were okay with the male being in this particular room with the social workers. And he had to translate for his mum because she didn't speak English, but she was married to an Australian man that was abusing her. And I looked around the room, and there were people who were so alone who were still in their situation. And I looked and I thought, the difference between me right now and these people is that I'm out of the heat of that environment where it is your normal and you don't know how to get out of it. And it's such a huge step to go as far as to get a protection order in place or just to leave. It's dangerous. And it's a big mental and emotional leap. It's a leap into the unknown. And so I just prayed. And as we went through that process and got our order, I just said, God, I've prayed for years that I want to do something in this space and give back into an area that, you know, I felt a beauty from ashes. And so I want to see that beauty for other people's pain in their ashes. And God, you got to give me something. And anyway, I prayed that this one morning, and we had friends coming over later that afternoon, and I was cleaning. And as I was cleaning, I got as clear as anything this picture. And it was a picture of a home that people could stay in midterm to long term. So, you know, a lot of the shelters, it's short term. And so mentally you're like, well, what do I, my kids are in school. I have a job. Like, what, I go stay at a shelter for 2 weeks and then what? Like, I've got to find my feet. And I feel for people who are your average middle income earning people that it's a big leap to look at something that's close to homelessness or housing commission, or, you know, those are all incredible services, but you're having to leave something familiar to you into a lot of unfamiliar ground. And so I got this vision of this home where people could come stay 6 to 9 months, where basically in that home, it's got a central homestead with homes around it. And in that central home, they've got psychological support, counseling for kids and adults. They have distance ed for the children. So maybe you do have to pull your kids out for a term, but they're still learning. It's fine. Arts therapy, music therapy, equine therapy, just having basically a one-stop shop of holistic help where women can come and all the unknowns that stop you from leaving are dealt with in that space, and it's just the unknown relationally that you then have to deal with. So it's basically eliminating as many unknowns as possible, so that the woman can focus on the few unknowns that they need to, which is where to from here with our relationship. So wow, yeah, that was the dream. I got it in. It was just, I was cleaning it in a split second. I had a picture. I know what it looks like. I've written it all down, and I'm very restful in the fact that it's a seed planted, and I've been doing a lot of research and talking to people in a number of spaces in and around that area of domestic violence. But I feel rested in the sense of it's a seed and I'm watering it, and I don't need to push open doors. Getting all the groundwork underway, but I do believe God will open doors at the right time.
That is so exciting. I'm really looking forward to just watching this space and to seeing that coming to fruition. Yeah.
Thank you.
What's the scripture that you said that you are loving right now?
Oh, okay. So it's actually a great one coming off the back of that. I've just been really challenged by God is infinite in his resources and his supply for us when we're just willing to surrender ourselves to him and, live in a life obedient in him. But I was reading just in Hebrews 11. Let me just get there. Hebrews 11 and 12. So obviously Hebrews 11 is just the great hall of faith of all the greats in the Bible. But it goes through and... in my Bible, I've got these two big picture pages in between, so it's breaking up the scripture over four pages. But it just, it goes through by faith Abraham, by faith Sarah, by faith, it goes through Moses and all of them, and it's all really great. People have done incredible things in the kingdom of God. But then it gets to Hebrews 12 and it says this: therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up, and let us run with endurance the race that God has set before us. We do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. Because of the joy set before him, he endured the cross. And it goes on. But here's what stuck out to me is it goes through all these Hall of Faith people, Hall of Famers, as I call them. And it gets to that verse 1 in chapter 12 where it says, therefore, since we're surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses, let's throw off the things that weigh us down and, slow us down in our faith walk. And anyway, the thing that stood out to me was I looked back at all these people, like David's in there, Gideon, Samson, and I'm like, actually, all these people were flawed human beings just like you and me. And what was a game changer in all of their life that allowed them to be used by God for kingdom purposes was that they fixed their eyes on God. And we're encouraged, fix your eyes on Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who with the joy set before him endured the cross. And for me, it's just Jesus found joy. It was joy that compelled him to endure the pain of the cross so that we could be reconciled back into relationship with the Father and so that we can play our part in doing kingdom things for him. And we just so easily slow down by, we're distracted by our past, by our shame, by, sin, little distraction, the things that distract us every day from being in his presence. And I was just really inspired to go, if God can use those people who were all imperfect in different ways, Abraham tried to outwork the purpose of God by sleeping with a different woman to be able to have a baby, some really big flawed things that are done, King David, so many.
Yeah.
And yet God calls them faithful, but God's faithful. And we just ask, if we just fix our eyes on Jesus, we're surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses in these people. So anyway, I have just been stuck on that for about 2 weeks now, where I just can't shake the idea that there is so much more for us, and that we've got to abide in God's presence and fix our eyes on Jesus, and we've got to throw off the things that entangle us and weigh us down, distractions, sin, our thought life, whatever it is, because there's a great life to be lived that's significant. And
absolutely,
God is limitless. And so I'm really compelled by this resourceful, limitless God who wants to use us and bless us in incredible ways.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. Thanks, Kirsty. That's so good. Well, I'd love to finish off my episodes with just asking my guests a couple of fun questions. So the first one is, what are you reading at the moment and what are you listening to?
Oh, good question. Okay. So I'm about to start a book called Silke's Journey. I have just been doing World War II. I started with Tattooist of Auschwitz, Light After the Dark, and All the Light We Cannot See. They're all on Nazi Germany. And are the most inspiring, incredible books to read. Really encourage it. And Silke's Journey.
Sorry, are they like a series or are they just three separate books all on that same topic?
Three separate books. Yeah. I just felt at the beginning of COVID, I wanted to read about war and get perspective on what suffering looks like and what it really is to be under the rule and control of a government. At the beginning of that, and just get perspective and be grateful for the country we live in and the freedom we have. Yeah. And I am addicted to reading World War II books. So Silke's Journey is the second book that is connected to Tattooist of Auschwitz. But this is what's great about all of them. They all based on real people's stories. And I'm pretty sure every single book I just mentioned are all by Australian authors, because a lot of these people have ended up in Australia on a ship back in the day, from wherever, whatever camp they escaped. Mm-hmm. Absolutely incredible stories of humanity when we're placed under pain and pressure, and some beautiful things that can be produced. So highly recommend, start with Tattooist of Auschwitz, can't put it down. I've had Silke's Journey for a couple of months sitting there, but I'm about to pick it up and read it.
And what is your favorite room of your house?
Oh, that is a tough one. I love our bedroom right now. It feels like a retreat. I love the homework station for the boys. I love both boys' bedrooms. I love probably my All favorite of it. Room. Well, I have to say probably my favorite room is still the dining room. It's not even a full dining room. It's just an open plan nook. But it has the table, and it's where we have laughter. It's where we have people. It's where we play games. There's heaps of memories attached. And then we have a jacaranda tree outside, which is like my dream I've always wanted. So sitting outside there in the morning is another favorite space. I can't choose, but that's all of them.
Oh, that's so good. Well, I've really loved this conversation that we've gotten to have tonight, Kirsty. So thank you so much for your time. Would you like to finish up by praying for us and our listeners?
I would. I'd love to. God, I just thank you for everybody who's listening to this. And first and foremost, God, I pray that if there's been something that I've shared or that Mel shared that resonates in someone's heart, I just thank you that that's a seed that keeps on being watered. But God, I pray that we continue to know you like never before, that we people who are hungry to enter your presence and abide with you daily. And from that, God, I just pray that we approach life from a position of rest, from an authority in knowing who we are and whose we are. And I just pray incredible blessing over people listening, that they know your extravagant love, that they find awe and wonder in creating as they come closer to their creator. So God, bless everybody. Bless Melanie and this incredible podcast that she's doing. And God, I just thank you for each person listening, that they have a healthy and blessed life in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. And if people want to connect with you, Kirsty, they can go to @thehomechronicles through Instagram, and your website is?
thehomechronicles.com.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you know somebody who would really benefit from listening to this episode, then click on the share button and send them a link. Also, I'd so love it if you could take the time to quickly subscribe and write me a review. If you want to get in touch for any reason, DM me on Instagram @Mel_Lynham. Talk to you soon.